Well, good morning. It's an honor to be here with you this morning and really appreciate the opportunity to get to share with you today. Hope you enjoyed that. That was a clip from Channel 4 Sports in Boston a few years ago. The Park Street Church was having its 200th anniversary, and they were bringing in different speakers every month, and they're trying to get people to come to church that don't normally do. And they asked me about bringing a Red Sox player, and I told them about this rookie, and they're like, "Oh, we don't know who he is." And I said, "He'll be good." And so obviously Justin did a great job, and God worked through him. And part of what I've done over the years is I'm often where the media is. We're often waiting for players. So instead of just kind of getting frustrated, I started building relationships with the media. And most of them had a negative perception of anything Christian, and so I get to build relationships, get to know them, and build some trust, and their perception started to change. And Dan Roach, who did that clip, and Steve Burton, they grew to trust me, so now it gets to the point where I can just call them and say, "Hey, we're doing this, I think you'd enjoy it," and then they most likely they're going to send a camera and a crew. And so it was very intentional over the years, but just been able to get positive things about the Lord out in the media to fight that battle. So that's been encouraging. I hope you're encouraged by that. But anyways, I'm from the Rhode Island area. I grew up in Warwick, and Dick Nooney, who's part of your congregation, was one of my first donors to my ministry, and he's a part of my board, so that's how I got to be here today. And I think I know a few of you from being down in the Narragansett area. I'm often down here. Narragansett Beach is my favorite beach to go to, and I love to boogie board and to body surf and all that. And took some surfing lessons a couple of years ago, and after about a week of that, I figured it was going to be athlete in traction instead of athletes in action, so decided maybe I should just stick with the body surfing and forget the try and get up on a board. But to start out, before we start with the message, I wanted to share a few pictures with you to kind of give you a little update on what God's been doing, and hope you'll be encouraged. And before I do that, what I found out over the years is I feel like God is giving me a lot of influence through the people he's having me work with, and it's like, how do I make the most of that? And so I would seek him in prayer and try to figure out where his heart is with things. And so I have a little grid I tend to bring things through that I pretty much dedicate every day through, and I think you'll see it in some of the pictures. But I figured out the most important thing is to glorify Christ. You mentioned that a couple of times earlier today, that that's what we're here for. That's our purpose, is to bring glory to him, and all honor and glory belongs to him. So if we can gear our efforts toward that, things tend to happen faster. And then the Great Commission, I'm sure you're familiar with, evangelism, discipleship, to share your faith in Christ, to lead people to him, and then help build them into people who can share with others also, which we'll talk about later. And then to look for and to help the hurting and the poor, that God has a cares about those who are hurting amongst us, and then to impact the culture. And that's kind of some of those media-type things is the way I try to do that. So that's the grid I bring things through. So I wanted to share a few pictures, give you a little update. I'll try to get out of the way here, I guess. And so just try to go through these quickly. If we have these, is one of the things we did recently was have that's First Speech in Newport. So I was able to help with an evangelistic outreach. Oh, that's great. I can see it up there, too. To this area. And so one of the pastors down there contacted me. He got five churches together, and we were able to pull together an outreach. And we had about 250 people there on First Speech about, I think it was October 4th. So it was only this month, really. And then let's go to the next picture, I think, with that, isn't there? Yeah, that's Bill Buckner. I don't know if you remember that name, famous name from Red Sox history. He's the guy the ball went through his legs. That's right. That's what he's known for. But he was a borderline Hall of Fame baseball player before that. And somewhere in the process, he came to the Lord. And so this is the first time he really shared his faith in a very direct way like this. And he did a great job. That's Ken Bell from ABC 6 Sports, who emceed. He's a part of my board as well. So that was a great outreach. And I'm sure if your church would like to help out with that next year and bring some friends that don't go to church, I think they're more likely to go hear some famous athlete go speak than they are sometimes to go to a church event. So I'm sure you could get yourself involved in that. If we go on to the next one, this is that was at McCoy Stadium in Pawtucket. I interned in college with them. That's where I got my real college education, and I was a sports management major. So that's me with Dwight Evans and his wife Susan. Dwight is voted the Red Sox all-time greatest right fielder. And he's someone I informally disciple, so we get together every now and then and goes through some things, and he and his wife have a kind of a dramatic testimony. The kids have a terrible disease, just multiple surgeries, and they tell their story of coming to faith in the process of that. So the Paw Sox approached me about trying to make their faith day more effective, and so they're trying to get churches to bring people out there, and they're really bending over backwards to be helpful. So that's another thing you could partake in next May, if you like, where you could bring friends and family to a to hear a baseball player speak and then go to a game. And so that's so Dwight and Susan and I were able to share about Christ in a personal way with about 300 people that day before the game. And so we can go on from there. I know another ministry you're involved with here is the Providence Rescue Mission. And so I've been able to get very involved with them, and I'm good friends with Sean, the director, and I've been mentoring his son Connor for about 4 or 5 years now. Connor's a hockey player. So what I do is I take pro athletes down to the rescue mission, and we help to serve meals just like you do once a month. So just found that I can get non-Christian athletes to come down there and to help to reach out to the poor and the homeless, and that's something they're willing to do. In the process, I build a relationship with them, and then we talk about why we're doing this. It becomes an indirect way to be able to share about the Lord with them. We've got a couple more pictures here of that. That's some soccer players from the New England Revolution. They've really enjoyed coming down. And one player, that's me with Sean, and some of the players are brought down. And we had one guy come to Christ this way. After about a year of doing this kind of stuff, he finally really wanted to come to know Christ. And so it's been a great way to, once again, help the hurting, but also gives me a chance to share my faith with some of the pro athletes. And then next we have... this is me recently at the Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, D.C. You know, that's where the Wounded Warriors, you see those commercials about Wounded Warriors. So what happens is people get seriously injured on the battlefield of Iraq and Iran, and they're here at Walter Reed within days. And so what I've been able to start doing is bringing professional sports teams down there, and we've been able to go room to room sharing with guys who are hurting. This is with the Pittsburgh Pirates. I guess that was in August, actually. If we can keep going with these pictures, that there's a shot there. You know, unfortunately, I don't know, you can quite see it lost in the white sheets, but that's a young soldier. I'm always struck by how young they are. He's probably, what, 18, 19? He's missing both legs. And so he, if you can't see it in the bed there. And around him there is, that's David Ortiz and Dustin Pedroia from the Red Sox. It's Brad Stevens, coach of the Celtics, and some of the other Celtics. So what happened was they approached me. We were talking to them about it, and I was, for about a year and a half, it got me to get the Celtics to go there because we finally coordinated when they could be in town playing the Wizards. And then they called me about 2 weeks before and say, well, the Red Sox want to come at the same exact time. And I was like, well, I guess God's working here. So we had them come because they were at the White House with their World Series trophy that day. So we basically took over the hospital for about 2 hours as they listened. God's just given me a great opening with the hospital there. So we set up a situation in this big cafeteria. We had players from both teams lined up and the Wounded Warriors who were outpatients still getting help and learning how to walk with prosthetics, that kind of thing. And then we had some active soldiers who were in the area, and then the nurses and doctors who worked there. So we had hundreds of soldiers come in through and to get encouraged by these guys. And then what happened is we took a select few and went room to room. Fortunately, there's less in the rooms right now with getting the acute care. So these guys went room to room, and one fun story there was, I don't have a picture, but after we got through in the rooms, the guys went downstairs, and there was a patient down there who had just come in, similar, just serious injuries, and they got him outside in his rollaway bed, and it's a beautiful day. So the nurse says, hey, we got some Red Sox and Patriots, would you like to meet these guys? And he goes, well, you got any hockey players? You know, some people you can't please, and so, David Ortiz is great in these situations. He pulls out his cell phone and calls Sean Thornton, who was with the Bruins. He says, here, talk to him. So so he's laying in his bed surrounded by Red Sox and Celtics talking to a Bruins player. So kind of made his day. But really what you're doing is you're trying to show God's love to people. Some of these guys are there for months, laying in a bed with their mother just watching over them with their girlfriend. And so if you can break up their day for 15 minutes, you're really just showing some of God's love and mercy to them. And the rule in the hospital is if they initiate with you, you can talk about whatever you want, but you know you can't just do it on your own. But so at times, guys, you know, why are you guys here? Who are you? And so it opens a chance to tell them how much God loves them. So we can go from there. That's me with the commanding officer, and God often puts me in positions that I can, we're talking about impacting the culture. He's the commanding officer for the whole Bethesda Naval Base and Walter Reed. They're combined now. So now I've got a relationship going with him, and so... He runs a show down there, so when you have influence like that, God can open doors and you can eventually share about him with them too. And that's David Ortiz signing some autographs for people right before we get started. And we can go from there. And then one of the other things I've been able to do is work in inner city, both with the Rescue Mission in Providence and then in Boston. The Lord's allowed me to build some really good bridges with mostly black churches. And so that's the gym I'm standing in. That was also the sanctuary for Bethel AME Church, a leading church in Boston. But anyway, I used to go down there and bring athletes down, and that gym right there, I used to have a carpet floor, and the carpet was usually kind of torn up and stained. This was their gym. This is also their sanctuary. And the rims would be hanging down. So I used to pray that God would allow me to refurbish the gym. That was a dream I had, to just be able to put a wood floor in and to be able to air condition it. And they used to run a summer basketball league out of there, just doing all kinds of great work and run down conditions. So long story short, after the 2004 World Series, Trot Nixon said he wanted to give some of his money away from the World Series, and then they weren't allowed to give it to me because there's a lot of rules there. But so I said, well, you know about this church? He goes, well, just check it out. So I said, okay, and I got back to him, and I said, well, good news, bad news. It's going to cost $70,000 to get air conditioning on a floor. He says, well, I'll do half, see if any of the Patriots want to match it. So then I went to a Patriot Bible study, and I announced that. And next day, Rodney Harrison said he would match it, so we had $70,000 to do that. And then the church said, well, can you raise another $35,000 so we can get a youth pastor to help run the gym? And I was like, well, sure. So one of my board members approached someone, and from Fidelity, he donated $20,000. He said he'd raise another $15,000. And then he ended up giving all $35,000. So now we had $105,000. So we were able to do all this. And then they put the floor in. It was a plastic floor, and it was kind of defective. And then I'm like, ugh. Like 2 months later, the church is calling me saying the floor is defective. So the floor company came, and they said, well, you're right. You know, we really want to put some wooden floors in to demonstrate how we can do that. So why don't we just put a wooden floor in for nothing, and you guys can just use that. And I'm like, great. That's what I wanted in the first place. So so we were able to do a lot, and we got some new rooms put in there. And so it was fun to be able to do that. That's a group right there. Around the NFL, some of the players started this thing called Shop with a Jock, and it's have an athlete come, and some of the players would donate money to take a really poor family clothes shopping for kids at Christmas. So with my connections with the inner city, we were able to go through this church. Now this church contacts some other churches, and we try to find the people who need the help the most. So every year for about 7 or 8 years, we had about $10,000 a year, and gave to give 50 families $200, took them to a Burlington coat factory in the city that gave us a discount, and able to just take them shopping for a day, and then go to McDonald's for lunch, and they're able to get clothes for the kids for Christmas. And then we'd have one of the athletes speak, or I would speak, so that gave me an opportunity to share my testimony and share the gospel with everybody that was there, and just telling them that this is an example of God's love for them, and that's why we're doing this. And so that was a great opportunity for me there. So I've really had some great opportunities in inner city Boston. So we can keep going from there. We got that's me with Trot Nixon, and Trot and his wife came to Christ with me and discipled them, and that's Charlie Weiss, who was with the Patriots as a tight ends coach, went on to be a coach at Notre Dame in Kansas. And we're at Wrigley Field in Chicago, actually, right there. And so it was a great time to disciple Trot through the years. And then we keep going from there. That's Dwight Evans down at spring training, and the same thing, kind of an informal discipleship with him. And then if we can go one more. And then that's Ryan and Nicole Guy from the Revolution the last couple of years. And they're cute little kids. And just been able to take them from they were just kind of sitting in the back of church to really, they're like missionaries now. After 2 years of meeting, they share their faith wherever they go. He's on the Guam national team, actually. And whenever he goes back to Guam, he shares his faith with the people in Guam. So that's been a great opportunity. And I think that's it. I don't know if we have any more there. Is that it there, Judy? Okay. So I wanted to just try to not go too long on that, but try to give you an overview I do, and I hope you're encouraged by seeing the things that God's been doing. And I was praying about what to share with you, and I wanted to share a little bit about how this all got started for me and take you a little bit behind the scenes into pro sports. A lot of things, you hear a lot of crazy things going on. There's a lot of good things going on, too, and try to give you a little more idea of what's going on spiritually, what's going on a more personal level that I think you'd enjoy hearing, and how I've applied the scripture that we're going to use today. And this is the scripture I feel like God is calling me to share with you, to encourage you to continue to apply, as you already have, I'm sure, and to continue to go on from there. But, you know, at times, especially when I was I haven't been with the Red Sox in a few years, I was with this team for 13 seasons, but I'm often asked, how did you get to be chaplain of the Red Sox, you know, and I try to tell people when I was 18 that I came to faith in Christ. I didn't know anything. It was a very childlike prayer for me at that point when I came to him. And one of the first things I heard was, if you have faith in God, that he'll answer your prayer. So the only thing I wanted to do at that point was play for the Red Sox. was like, God, I want to play for the Red Sox. And, you know, fortunately for you now, you could ask Dick Nooney about this, but I've improved a lot. And I used to mumble a lot and kind of I wasn't speaking too clearly. And so I think what happened is God thought I wanted to pray for the Red Sox. And so I'll make you chaplain. So your first point of application today is to speak clearly when you're praying, because, you know, there's millions of people talking to Jesus at once. You want to be clear about what you're asking for because you might get it. So I think that's how it happened. But actually, it was a much more painful process for me. I think a lot of times for us, before we come to faith, we have to go through some hard times. And that was the case for me before we're humble enough to really surrender our lives to Him and so He can really use us. And so, like I told you, I grew up in Warwick and lived kind of a normal childhood, and I was always playing whatever sport was in vogue at the time, was in season at the time. And baseball was my favorite. But when I just turned 13, my father passed away from cancer, and that was in October. And then in November, about I think a month to the day later, actually, my best friend was killed by a hit-and-run driver. He was waiting for a school bus. Actually, just moved to North Kingstown up on Shermantown Road, not too far from here. And he was struck and killed. And then, so that was October, November. And then the following March, my mother passed away. So it was just, she had some illness going on anyways. I think she had a broken heart from losing my dad. And everything just kind of collapsed at once on her. So, you know, what do you do at that age? You don't even know how to process that much pain. I had two older sisters. One was 19 and one was 18. Excuse me. And the younger of the two became my guardian. And, you know, we didn't own the house. We didn't really have insurance. And she was a real saint for really taking me on. And so she was a bank teller, and I had a Social Security check, and we just got by. And I wanted to stay in Warwick because I wanted to play pro baseball, and I was going to a school at the time, Pilgrim, that was probably the best school to go to for baseball back in that day. And so we managed to stay in Warwick, and after about a year and a half, 2 years, it got to be a lot of pressure on her, as you can imagine. So I moved in with a baseball coach, and it just didn't work out at all with his family. It just wasn't a good setting there to be there. So then another coach had felt bad for me, another coach, and so I moved in with his family for the summer, and it was a Christian family, and they had kids my age, and it was just a better setting for me to be in. And then it still wasn't easy just living with another family, but I stayed with them and then moved back with my sister. By now I'm a junior in high school at Pilgrim, and you know, I started pitching poorly, and I thought I was going to get cut because our team was so good, and that would have been the end of the world for me, because that's really what I was living for. That's what kept me going and distracted me from all the problems I had. And then I also started to wonder what happens when you die, because I'd seen so much death at such a young age. I was thinking about things that most kids at 15 or 16 are not thinking about. And so I started praying for God to help me understand and wondering where my parents were. And so then I didn't get cut, but things didn't go as well as I had hoped in high school. And so by the time I graduated, that summer afterwards, I'd get very depressed at times. Other times get anxious and just really crying out to God, seeking Him, not really understanding what it meant to know Christ. And I had I'd gone to church, but I just wasn't getting it. You know, with that second film I lived with, I went to church, and I started out going to church as a kid, but it just didn't click for me what it meant to really know Him personally. And so that fall, I managed to make it into Rhode Island Junior College, and I made the baseball team there. So one night, I went down to that second coach's house. They had become like a second family to me, and I'd go down there on weekends, go to church with them, go on vacations with them. And my coach was watching a TV show. An old Walt Disney actor, Dean Jones, was giving his testimony on that show of what Christ meant to him. And for the first time, it really started to sink in. I started asking him. I said, "Coach, what's he talking about? Clearly, can you be more clear with me on this?" And what he told me was that, you know, despite the hard things that had happened to me, that God loved me and cared about me and wanted to lead me through life. But he said, you know, like everyone, you need forgiveness. And so he said that Christ died for me, shed His blood on the cross, that He rose from the dead. And He was willing to forgive me based on that if I was willing to ask Him. So I just needed somebody to explain it clearly to me. So I just went home that night. You know, we lived in this rundown apartment. And I just got down beside my bed, and I asked Christ to forgive me and to lead me and guide me. It was a very childlike prayer. Sincere, and it wasn't real emotional for me. I didn't see any visions or anything, but I knew something had happened. So I went back to my coach a couple weeks later, and I told him I did that, and I think he was surprised I actually followed through. And so he said, "Well, you've begun a relationship with God. This isn't being religious. This is a relationship." And he gave me a Bible, and he said, "If you read a little bit every day, you'll be surprised how applicable this is to everyday life." And then if you talk to him, that's prayer, and that's how it works. And I was like, okay, so I just started doing that. It was hard back then to find people my age that knew what I was talking about. I ended up wanting to be going into sports management. I hurt my arm in junior college, and so I decided, well, if I can't play for the Red Sox, I want to be general manager. And so I heard about sports management, so I called the Pawtucket Red Sox up and told them what I was looking into, and they needed interns at the time. Ben Mondor just bought the team, and so I went down, and they hired me as an intern. So I ended up spending all 3 summers in college as interning for them. So just like that, I'm working for the Red Sox, and so I felt like God was just moving in my life at a quick rate, and I had more peace inside. I had a sense of optimism for the future that even though these things had happened, he had a plan for me. So that's how it happened. And then, I got involved with, when I got to UMass, I was like, there's got to be somebody who knows what I'm talking about here. And so I got involved with Athletes in Action. That was a part of something called Campus Crusade for Christ, and slowly got involved. And after about a year or so, I felt like I was kind of one foot with the Word, one foot with the Lord and one foot with the world. And I feel like he told me, you got to be totally committed to me. So once again, I get down beside my bed. I said, okay, Jesus, I'll go anywhere. I'll do anything. I'll say anything. Just tell me what you want. I'm all yours. And, if you offer that, he'll definitely take you up on that. And he started using me more to lead other people to him and to start a Bible study in my room. And just over time, I just started to get more of a burden for the people in New England. I had so few people that seemed to know what I was talking about when I talked about knowing Christ. And it was so difficult to help people understand. But I felt like God was kind of giving me a vision and an understanding that there's one group in New England that everybody seems to listen to, and that was just the athletes, the sports world. That group seems to be able to cross all the different areas of life. And so that if I could reach them, that they could be a bullhorn to everybody else. So that's where that vision started. And when I graduated, I had an opportunity to work for the Paw Sox, but I felt like God was calling me to do this for him. And so that was the way I went. Went to Syracuse University and started Athletes in Action there. I always thought I'd come back to New England. And So then I, after about 10 years, I felt like it was time. There was no obvious, God has to work before you get into an NFL team. The player we thought would help was no help. And then, so I was down here actually in Narragansett one day, sitting with Dick Nooney and his family, and a pastor came by and said, well, how are you going to get in with the Patriots? I'm like, I don't know. And then the phone rang about an hour later, and it was Charlie Weiss from the Patriots. And he said, well, we need someone. Bill Parcells just took over the team. We need somebody to do this. We had an Athletes in Action guy in New York. Are you available? I said, yeah, I can squeeze you in, I think. And he goes, well, come up to Bryant. We'll talk about it. So I went up to Bryant College where they had camp and got all dressed up and trying to think what I'm going to say to Parcells. And Charlie comes out and says, well, Bill just called the meeting. I got about 2 minutes. This is what we need. Can you do that? And I was like, yep. He goes, okay, come back Wednesday. That was it. I'm in. And so I showed up. 20 guys showed up at the first Bible study. I just put some signs up. And then 2 years later, the door opened with the Red Sox, and they called and they said, would you like to do this? And I was like, sure. So that was it. So God just brought that full circle, just all the way back from not working for the Paw Sox to coming around. And, I'm wearing a 2004 World Series ring. And so when they gave me that, that was kind of like God just, I went from not turning down an opportunity to being right in the middle of their biggest moment in history. So I feel like God just brought the whole thing full circle. So that's like the 5-minute version of my life and how it all happened and how I got to be chaplain of the Red Sox. But I just wanted to give you a little more insight there. And, when I did start with Charlie and the Patriots and the, one time I remember showing up at training camp and one of the coaches said, you need to go talk to that guy. Because we had Bible studies going, we had chapel services going, we had a lot of things going. And I said, why? He said, he's always reading his Bible. I'm like, all right. So I sat down and he told me his name is Curtis Martin. Some of you longtime Patriot fans might remember him. He just retired 3 years ago. He went from the Patriots to the Jets and retired as number 3 all-time in the NFL in yards rushing. So the guy's always reading his Bible. And, they take a break from offensive meetings reading his Bible. And so they didn't really know what to make of this guy. So you get to talk to him, you sense Christ's presence, He was just committed to the Lord. He grew up in inner city Pittsburgh. He thought he should be dead because he was in so many shootings. And he gave his life to Christ in the middle of a shooting in inner city Pittsburgh. So, the team didn't know what to make of him, but everybody respected him. Actually, they made fun of him at first. Back then, all the rookies had to get their hair buzzed, and he didn't want his haircut, and people were just, afraid to touch him. They used to call him Moses and Golden Child. I think they thought they would get struck by lightning if they did anything to him, and so they just left him alone. But He rushed for 120 yards in his first game as a rookie, and Sports Illustrated came out with this huge thing about it called the gift from heaven. It's like opened up. And so God went on to use Curtis quite a bit there. He went from being made fun of to the most respected guy on the team. So he was one of my favorite Patriots. And so once again, we had Bible studies. We had couples Bible study. We had chapel. By the time I left the Patriots, we had about 30 guys come to Bible study every week. And that was because I always tried to disciple a few guys, and they started leading the Bible study themselves. So the teammates would come because they were a teammate was leading it. It was a lot harder to say no to them than it was to say no to me. So the and then with the Red Sox went on, you know, every Major League Baseball team has a chapel service on Sunday before the game. I don't know if you know that. Football, basketball, they all do it. And so so I'd go visit with and the guy that grew up to be closest to was Trot Nixon. And then so I'd check in with him, and I'd go to the visiting locker room. And so then the team, you know, I was surprised to see the team that brought the most guys was the Yankees. And so, you know, that was kind of disappointing to me in some ways. But the you know, he grew up hating the Yankees, and I'd go in there, Mariano Rivera, Andy Pettit. These guys would be so nice. You know, they just go out of their way to be helpful, and they'd get all the players together. And after a while, it was kind of hard to hate the Yankees anymore, you know. So I was just like, so I was just surprised. We had all these guys there. And you know, the room is so small in Fenway, and the visiting locker room is really small. The only place we could get everybody together was actually the shower. So I'd be standing in the shower with a spigot over my head with my Bible open preaching. And fortunately, everybody was dressed. But, you know, that was the place where we could... I told the Lord I'd go anywhere and do anything. I didn't expect to be standing in the shower at a Fenway Park. And but they were all helpful. And the player that used to come, I don't know if you remember Bucky Dent way back from Red Sox history. He was the one that hit the home run that got the Red Sox out of the playoffs back in the 70s that added to the frustration of the Red Sox-Yankee lore. Well, somewhere along the line, he became a believer. And then he goes on to be manager of the White Sox. So he comes to town, and he actually gave us his office to do the chapel and to get us out of the shower. And he'd actually sit there, and which most managers didn't. So I'd be standing there with my Bible open. All I could do was picture Bucky Dent hitting this home run over left field, killing the Red Sox chances at the time, but he turned out to be a great guy. And so with the Red Sox, back in around 03, 04, and 05, all those years when they were really at their peak in Red Sox history, we probably had the most players of anybody in baseball coming out to chapel and coming out to, for our chapels, we'd get over 20 people sometimes, the players, coaches, there's only 25 guys on the team. And a lot of that was because of Trot and his wife, Catherine. You know, I met them and I said, I was always looking for a few guys to disciple. Once again, I knew the players would follow their, the other players. So I started meeting with them, and it was obvious his wife didn't know the Lord, and I wasn't sure about him, but somewhere they both for sure came to Christ. And we started meeting every week. And every week I'd say, you know, today I'm going to show this to you, and someday you can share it with others, all right? And they say, okay. I just wanted to steal in them from day one that this isn't just for you. This is for you to share it with other people. And they just really owned that. And so as they grew and matured, we started doing that around 99. So by the time the Red Sox were really peaking, they became leaders of the team. So, you know, every Sunday, Trout would say, chapel time for chapel, who's coming to chapel? You know, and he'd be very bold and just get them all there. And then his wife started, we got a wives Bible study going. And then we'd have a players Bible study, which we had about six, seven guys too. We had the wives study. And then we had a Sunday school going because we wanted something for the kids when the wives were meeting. So we just had a lot of things going, and the Lord just raised all that up. But he largely used Trot and Catherine because they were willing to take a stand. And they became multipliers. It became true for them. They shared their faith with others, and it just took off through the team. And then back in 03, I was going through in our team Bible study the Purpose-Driven Life book. Remember that with Rick Warren? And it starts out with, it's not about you. It's about sharing your faith. So by August, we got through, we're getting to the part where it talks about sharing your faith with others. So I said to Trot and the guys, if any of you guys are willing to speak up, if you're ready at that point yet, to take a stand. We're going to have a lot of media coverage here in the next 2 months because we're in this for the playoffs. So, you know, as I just left it at that, I didn't want to force it, but I told them that you need to be ready for your moment. You know, don't let it pass by because we just come off the Super Bowl with the Patriots. And one of the stars of the Super Bowl had come to Christ with me, but he had been wandering in his faith. And he had the world at his feet, and he wasn't ready to share his faith. And I said, you know, don't let that be true of you. Be ready for your moment. So fast forward a couple of months. So now we get to a playoff game, and we're playing Oakland, and the winner is going to go on to play the Yankees. and to try to get to the World Series. And so we're in Fenway Park, and we're down. We're on the verge of elimination. I think it was a five-game series, and now we're down two games already. And then if we lose this game, we're done. So, you know, back then everything's so intense. The Red Sox hadn't won it all yet. So there's about 35,000 people, and they're just on their feet every time something happens. So now Trot has hurt that game. I know he's got like a pulled hamstring or something, so he can't play, but I knew he was going to probably pinch hit. So now we get the 11th inning, and we're there, and now we're down one run, but we get a man on second base, and now there's two outs. So he comes up on deck and starts warming up, and the crowd just gets going crazy because he was having a really good year, and they knew he was a good hitter, and he's just getting warmed up. They announce him to come up. He comes up, and the count gets to be two balls and two strikes, two outs, and a man on second. So everybody's on their feet just cheering for him to do something. So instead of telling you about it, I thought I'd show you what happened at that point. So hopefully this will work. It's all right. This is an advertisement for Hitachi if you're looking for a... No one put it into. That's all right, we'll just take a second here. So, you know, it's just building suspense. Remember, it's two balls, two strikes. And, if you all want to stand on your feet and start cheering or something, you know. You can. Okay. Oh, we had it working before. Look at that. Oh, shut off. You want me to go on? Oh, okay. But, you know, Trot was a, like I said, he was kind of like, remember they used to call him Dirt Dog? And he, there we go. Stop there. So what happened, so obviously see what happened, but so obviously for me that was a great moment, but I didn't know. I mean, I was at the game, so I'm driving home. So I get on the cell phone and I call them up, and his wife answers, and you know, they're all excited. And I was like, great. I said, well, Trot must be so excited. She goes, oh, he is. And I said, well, this is the biggest moment of his career, you know. And she goes, no, he's excited about what happened after the game. Here, talk to him. So then he told me about what he did. And he said, yeah, no, I was rounding second base, and I was trying to think about what I was going to say on TV so I could witness. And so so obviously Trot was ready for his moment, you know. So he was obviously listening when we talked about that 2 months earlier in Bible study. So actually, you know, obviously I feel like a proud dad in the sense of, so for him to be here, I mean, how many of us with 40,000 people rooting for you, cheering your name, and you're on national television, would you be thinking back, how can I glorify Christ in this moment? So in that moment for Trot, that went from being a great moment in his career and Red Sox history to going to be a moment that lasts for eternity, because he gave it for the glory of Christ. And so that was so today one of the things I wanted to ask you is, are you ready for your moment? You know, what is it that God's calling you to do? Are you ready for your moment, that whatever He would have you to do? And specifically when it comes to, are you ready to share your faith? Are you a usable vessel to have your moment, to do whatever it takes, whenever God might bring someone your way that needs to hear about Him? You know, most of us aren't going to be on national TV, but you might get a chance to talk to your neighbor or someone at work or a relative that God might want to work through you to speak to. And 2 Timothy 2:2 is the verse that I always emphasize to Trot and Catherine and other people that I meet with, and I do now with the guys I disciple. And it says, "The things you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, these entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." So what Paul's saying to Timothy is just reiterating again that I'm going to meet with you and you need to share it with others. And this was God's strategy. When Jesus came to the earth, he could have spent all his time during those 3 years of ministry with the multitudes, right? But he picked 12, and out of that 12, he even narrowed it down even further to who he was really going to pour into so that they could multiply themselves so we could eventually be here. So really it's a strategy of multiplication. And the ministry I work with has always been based on that. And you know, people laughed at Bill Bright when he kind of started that. And next thing you know, you get 197 countries. It's because he meets two people and they pour into two others and it just multiplies out like interest in the money. So if that chain never broke, you could reach 7 billion people in about 15 years. But of course that chain breaks. But I think with us, you know, in all the churches, I get to go to a lot of different churches doing this, and I think it just needs to be a point of emphasis for us to remember that we can multiply, and multiply growth can just really take off. And what I tell the guys when I meet with them, I say, what God's looking for is fat people. And they're like, what's that? And that means be faithful, available, and teachable. And that's what Timothy was, and that's what we need to look for. You know, some of the athletes, you know, some guys I've challenged, I say after they've been showing up for a while, I say, look, I'd like to help you grow deeper and help you to be someone that God can use further and with your family and in the community. But I lay out the challenge to them, and some decline. And I spend more time with the guys like Trot who are willing to put the time in. And because they're being faithful to God, they're being faithful to me with me, they're available to God to be used however he would like, and they're teachable. They're willing to read his word and really apply it to their lives. So those are questions we need to ask ourselves. Are we fat people? Are we faithful, available, and teachable? And what does it take to be a multiplier? It means being available however God wants. It's not about us, you know. It's about God can use any dummy. That's what I figured a long time ago, so why not me? So it's not like you have to be super talented or a great communicator. It's just the Holy Spirit working through us. Then we have to have a heart for others and to be burdened for others. And one of the reasons I'm still here in New England is because, you know, I was always burdened for the people in New England that I looked around that didn't know him. I saw a lot of religious people. I didn't see many people that really knew Christ and that had attained salvation for eternity. And, you know, the last two big studies that were done on religion and God and the Bible and all that, we live in the epicenter of the least reached part of the United States. We're sitting right in it. My whole Southern Mass in Rhode Island, this is the least, people know the least about the Bible, the least amount of people go to church. This is it. So we're right here. So we need to have a heart as we look around for others. So we need to ask ourselves, do we really care about those people that we're around? Even some of those people that might annoy us or don't agree with us, the fact they don't know Christ the way we do. Do we really believe that they're on a fast track to a Christless eternity, that they're facing that? Now, are we going to be burdened enough to really reach out and love them and perhaps even risk rejection to, in a loving way, to show what it means to know Christ? And I think the biggest strategy part of that is prayer. After about two or three years of knocking my head against the wall at Syracuse University trying to share Christ with people, it's just a very difficult place to do it. God convicted me to start praying more. I started praying for some big things started to happen. And I started praying through the rosters of the teams that I was trying to reach. I got back one year in August, and I started praying through the names. You can pray for 100, 150 people in just a few minutes. You don't have to pour over every name. So I prayed. I just lifted them up, and I prayed for the salvation of the souls and for God to raise up disciples. So after it got to be mid-October, and I was like, kind of like, God, what's the deal? I've been doing this since August. You know, I don't see anybody come to the Lord. Coming to you, and then right after that, I think he was just showing off a little bit, but you know, the next 10 guys I shared with all came to Christ. And I almost wonder, am I making this too easy? What's happening here? And so I feel like he's saying, here, watch this. And so, but I would sit down with them, and I'd been praying for them by name for 2 months, even though I didn't even know them. But we'd just done some surveys and sat down, and so God can do that. So we need to use the weapon of prayer to fight through the obstacles to make that happen. And then we just need to be strategic in the way we do it. So one way I'd like to challenge you to do today, I feel like God was telling me to emphasize that verse on 2 Timothy 2:2. And part of the challenge is to ask you to pray for five people. Think of five people locally, you know, that you can pray for, put their name in your Bible just every day. Just pray for Christ, for them to give their lives to Christ. And I can assure you what you're doing is you're setting the powers of heaven loose to do that. And like I said, it took a couple of months of praying at Syracuse before they started to saw the result. But, you know, if you had 200 people doing that, praying for five people, that'd be 1,000 people you're all praying for. If even 10% of them came to Christ and even half of them just came to your church, you'd have 50 new members next year. So it's just using the weapons that God's given to us, doing it for his glory, and seeing that what could happen. And so that'd be my challenge for you today, to take that verse from 2 Timothy 2:2, The things you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, these entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. So as you see people come to Christ, then be willing to give your life to pour into them and see them multiply out. I usually spend an hour and a half a week with some of these guys. If you do that over a year, you can really see life change. You know, that last couple I showed, that Ryan and Nicole from the soccer team, like I said, they went back from just being hanging out in the back of church to I challenged them, and after meeting with them for like 2 years, now they're like missionaries. They're so on fire for Christ, and I've been able to equip them to be able to share their faith. And so that's just really, I can tell you and assure you that it's just so rewarding when you see someone's life really change. It's worth whatever sacrifices you have to make to give to them. When you see Christ move in their life and then see them reach others, that's what makes it worth it. You know, I'm still in touch with Trot and Catherine, and Trot told me when he was a player he wanted to go on mission trips someday when he's retired. And now he's been to the former, I guess it's the Czech Republic, or Czechoslovakia now, the former Czech Republic. He's been there twice now on mission trips. And believe it or not, there's a population over there that wants to learn how to play baseball. So he goes over and teaches with a group and teaches them how to play baseball and shares Christ. And I said, well, why do you want to go there? And he goes, well, Central America's too easy. I want to go where the atheists are. So it's just fun to see someone's life change that much and to do whatever sacrifice you have to do to pour into someone's life like that. So the last little suggestion I'd like to do, and maybe we can talk about this more at Sunday school if any of you come after church. I don't know if you've ever seen this book. It's called The Purpose of Christmas, written by Rick Warren. So what I did in my neighborhood is I just started making friends with my neighbor, sending out Christmas cards, and then one year I just sent a copy of this. It's basically just four chapters on the purpose of Christmas, and it's Gospel of Luke, just explaining Christmas. So I said, how about we start a book study? We'll just come in, we'll just, for three weeks before Christmas, come to my house for an hour, and then we'll just go through the Christmas story. We'll get in the mood for Christmas. And so three people did that, and they loved it. And then they said, Rick Warren, you have a little video that goes with us that you can play, too, and as you explain it. It says, if you want to continue, continue. So they told me they wanted to continue. So I said, well, let's start a Bible study for people who have never read the Bible. So then they started inviting their friends, and now we got seven or eight people coming. And so far, two of them have come to Christ. You know, and these people never read the Bible before this started. So this is just an easy strategy you could do this year. This book costs about $4. Just hand out to your neighbors and just try to get into the discussion, maybe start a book study about the purpose of Christmas. So I really appreciate you allowing me to come today and to be able to share with you, and I cover your prayers for my efforts at serving Christ, and now I'd like to just pray for you as we end. So bow with me in prayer. Lord, I just thank you for this time, for this church and their faithfulness, and for how long this church has been here, faithfully ministering, representing you. And Lord, I pray that you just bless this church in an overwhelming way. I pray they continue to multiply themselves into the lives of others, that you'd raise up spirit-filled, multiplying disciples who are focused on your great commission and bring glory to you. In Christ's name, amen.